Globally, about 13% of the world is considered obese. They have a body mass index above 30. Here in the United States, more than a third of people are obese. Is there a connection between that and the high prevalence of severe coronavirus in the U.S. compared with other countries? Well, a recent study published in the Clinical Infectious Diseases Journal finds that obesity is a risk factor in COVID-19 hospital admissions for people under 60. Joining us now by Skype is Dr. Jennifer Leiter, who's the lead author of that study. She's a pediatric infectious disease specialist and hospital epidemiologist at NYU Langone Medical Center. Dr. Leiter, tell us what your study found.
When a patient started arriving at our medical center, it was always shocking to see younger patients get intubated and admitted to the ICU with COVID-19. And it was remarkable that many of them were overweight. So we decided just to look at risk according to BMI. And we found that adults under age 60 who were obese had a higher risk of getting admitted to the hospital and getting admitted to the ICU compared to people that had healthier weights and were non-obese.
So what do you think are the reasons that obesity would increase someone's risk of getting severely ill with COVID-19?
The study was really just an observational study. I can give you my personal theories. One of them is that people that are obese in general just have more compromised respiratory function at baseline compared to people that are not obese. So, for example, we know that obstructive sleep apnea is more prevalent, as is asthma or restrictive lung disease or reflux in people that are obese compared to people that are not obese. Another theory was that people that are obese may be more on just the inflammatory spectrum, even if they have not received a diagnosis of diabetes or cardiovascular disease. So, for example, you know, they may be early on in having hyperglycemia, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, and these are all risk factors for a more moderate or severe course of COVID-19. And the third theory was molecular. We know that the receptor that the virus attaches to is called the ACE2 receptor, and it is located not only in the lungs, but also on fat cells as well, on adipose cells. Another reason could be that when the SARS-CoV-2, the virus, attaches to the ACE2 receptor, it enters the cell through a protein called TMPRSS2. And we know that TMPRSS2 is sensitive to androgens or male hormones. It's just a theory, but this may be why men have a more severe course and why obese people may have a more severe course, because they do have a higher likelihood of more just circulating androgens. So it may be possible that the virus has more opportunity to enter cells easier.
Now, as you know, according to the OECD, the United States has, if not the highest, then one of the highest rates of obesity in the entire world of any country. Do you think that that has contributed to the fact that we have become one of the epicenters of COVID-19?
I think that there are regional vulnerabilities depending on where someone is located. So, for example, in China, it's possible that pollution and smoking made people in that region more vulnerable. In Italy, they've certainly had a significant course. They have a high percentage of people that are elderly, and their homes are often multi-generational. Grandparents live with grandkids. Mm-hmm. So I think they were particularly vulnerable. And I think in the United States, our Achilles heel will be obesity. We have a large percentage of the population, about 40% of the population in the United States has a BMI over 30, which is considered obese. And I think it puts us at a substantial risk. As far as New York City being one of the epicenters, I guess, of COVID, I think that has more to do with population density than having a large portion of the population that is obese.
But you think that in general, our Achilles heel in the United States will be obesity?
Yes, I think we are vulnerable to having a larger population of a moderate to severe course due to obesity.
There is a stigma around obesity. It's a sensitive subject for many people. Does that complicate your ability to study the link between obesity and COVID-19? Or how do you talk about it with patients?
I think it's important to sometimes take the emotional implications out of it when you're just trying to identify risk factors of people that can have a more severe course of COVID. It's important to identify risk factors because those are the people we may manage differently. So, for example, what does these findings imply? It implies that obese people are at a 2 to 3 times higher risk group than people that are not obese. So they may be the people that should isolate longer until the incidence in their region of COVID is, you know, extremely low. They may be the people that once we have good therapeutics identified, that when they're infected with COVID, they should probably be treated to prevent the risk of progression to moderate or severe course. So I know it could be a sensitive topic, but it's also important just to talk frankly and plainly and identify the higher risk groups.
But it's also an area where I can imagine, you know, unlike somebody who's going through cancer treatment or somebody who's got a weakened immune system, they think to themselves, yes, I am at higher risk because of this. People who are overweight may not think of themselves as a person at higher risk of getting COVID-19 because they just don't consider that to be a risk factor.
Right. I mean, I think in general, people that are overweight are less healthy than people that have a BMI of less than 30. So I think they're at risk of progressing to several kinds of diseases, not just having a more moderate to severe course of COVID-19.
You know, I feel like if I go back pre-COVID-19, almost every time there was a story involving some kind of health issue, the message from the medical community is, you know, overall, eat healthier, exercise more, don't smoke, and that will help you in many, 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 many kinds of issues. Do you think that it's worth thinking about that again now, given the situation we're all living through?
Absolutely. In general, those three recommendations will lead to healthier lives and longer lives and higher quality in some ways.
I just want to ask you about one other thing, because you are there in New York City, which at least for the last couple of months has been really the epicenter in the United States of the COVID-19 outbreak. You are a pediatric infectious disease specialist. Have you been treating children with this mysterious Kawasaki disease-like illness that seems to have a connection to COVID-19?
Yes, I have been.
And what do you make of that, or what have you learned about that part of this story?
So we know that coronaviruses can trigger Kawasaki disease. What has been surprising is that we're seeing older children with this type of Kawasaki-like illness. We know that it seems to be an inflammatory response to the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and it's presenting a little differently in the younger kids and the older children and young adults.
Have you seen enough of it to say to parents of kids of a certain age, you know, you need to be worried about this, or does it feel still very rare?
It still feels rare. I guess as a pediatrician and in a hospital, I'm seeing quite a few cases. But, you know, we suspect that 25 to 30% of New Yorkers had COVID. And when you have this new germ on a very large population, it almost shouldn't surprise us to now get cases of Kawasaki or Kawasaki-like syndrome. So it's still a pretty rare syndrome, considering that a very large quantity of people were infected with SARS-CoV-2 in a small area.
That is Dr. Jennifer Leiter, who is a pediatric infectious disease specialist and hospital epidemiologist at NYU Langone Medical Center. Dr. Leiter, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.